Welcome back. I'm Ian Masters, and this is Background Briefing. And joining us now is Lisa Gilbert, who's the director of Public Citizens Congress Watch Division. She's a contributor to the National Journal's expert blog on lobbying and ethics and writes frequently for the Huffington Post and Think Progress. Welcome to Background Briefing, Lisa Gilbert.
Thanks so much for having me.
And these two hearings today for nominees, Richard Cordray with the Consumer Finance Protection Bureau and Mary Jo White to head up the Securities and Exchange Commission before the Senate Banking Committee, it seems to me that the person who stole the show was Senator Elizabeth Warren, who didn't bother to ask questions of the witness since Richard Cordray had testified dozens of times before the panel. Instead, she turned to her Republican colleagues and absolutely blasted them for basically trying to hold up Cordray's nomination and weaken the agency itself. What was your reaction to it?
I think you have said it very well. We certainly expected a lot from Elizabeth Warren as a champion on consumer issues and on financial issues and protecting the public, and she's delivered over and over again since she started her brief tenure in the Senate. So this was no different. She came out guns blazing and absolutely took her fellow senators to task around their ridiculous refusal to move Cordray forward to head the CFPB.
So when she said to the Republican senators, the American people deserve a Congress that worries less about helping big banks and more about helping regular people who have been cheated on mortgages, on credit cards, on student loans, and on credit reports, what was the response?
I mean, I think that's correct, and we would agree. As a consumer group, I think this threatened filibuster against Director Cordray is just an attempt to weaken what has proven to be a really effective new agency. And, you know, that's a bad thing for the public. Regular people are depending on a consumer agency to be their watchdog, and it needs a head in order to move forward in its important duties.
But what do the Republicans say in response to these rather pointed questions?
Yes, I mean, they weren't really able to take it on directly. I think they settled back into what has been their objective, over the course of the year, and even ironically 2 years ago when we were looking to Elizabeth Warren to lead the agency, which is that they just don't like the structure. So they would prefer that the agency be run by a commission rather than by a single director. Citing the SEC as a model, and we would argue that that's far less effective than the current setup. They fall back on talking about the funding of the CFPB, saying that they should have the power as Congress to appropriate money to it rather than the current structure. But really, those are all just excuses. They don't want to see a CFPB in place, and they look for any opportunity to undermine it, and this was one of those.
Well, but Elizabeth Warren addressed that whole, the hypocrisy or the hollow nature of her Republican colleagues' objections to the Consumer Finance Protection Bureau and wanting to be able to control its budget and have a commission instead of an agency. She said, "What I want to know is why, since the 1980s, have there been agencies all over Washington with a single director, including the Office of the Comptroller of the Currency? But unlike the consumer agency, no one in the U.S. Senate has held up confirmation of their directors demanding that the agency be redesigned. What I want to know is why every banking regulator since the Civil War has been funded outside the appropriations process. But unlike the consumer agency, no one in the U.S. Senate has held up confirmation of their directors demanding that agency or those agencies be redesigned. And what I want to know is why there are agencies all over Washington whose rules are final subject to ordinary reviews and oversights, while the Consumer Finance Protection Bureau is the only agency in government subject to a veto by another agency. But unlike the Consumer Finance Protection Bureau, no one in the U.S. Senate holds up confirmation of their directors demanding that those agencies be redesigned." So, boy, I mean, she lays it out. Again, what's their response?
I mean, she's very clear, and they don't really have one. And I think that's the bottom line. I mean, she is pointing out that this is political posturing, that there is no reason this agency has been successful. Its structure is not unique, and it's necessary to protect the public. And what they're doing is a political joke. And so they don't really have anything to say that's legitimate. And so, you know, I can parrot back to you the excuses that they make, but the bottom line is,
you know, I certainly don't, it's bad enough hearing it for the first once, let alone hearing it again, because it is so hollow. But I was just interested in whether you can shame these people or whether they are shameless, because they seem to be shameless, excuse my language, whores for the banking industry.
Mm-hmm. I mean, I think so whether or not they're able to be shamed is certainly an open question. I think one thing we have on our side is that this time, this filibuster of any nominee to run the agency is even more hollow than it was before, because Cordray has been in place for a year. And, you know, across the spectrum, you know, both sides of the aisle and the regulated entities, the banks themselves, have said that he's done a good job, that he was balanced, that he took into account public opinion and industry opinion, that he paid attention, that he, you know, did due diligence on all the rulemakings that the CFPB is doing. And so it's even more right flank for, you know, his entire nomination to be blocked. And so those points being made over and over again are helpful and hopefully, in the end, persuasive.
Now, in terms of the Republican senators who have been holding up Richard Cordray and doing everything they can to stifle this agency or literally strangle it in the cradle, there is, however, one Republican senator who said he's going to vote for it, and that is Senator Tom Coburn. He's going to vote for Cordray's nomination.
That's right. So it's not 100% party line. It's not quite enough, but yes, you know, we... At the hearing today, Coburn said he plans to support the nomination, which we're happy to see. And I think hopefully some of those points I was making earlier about his true qualified status, having done this job for a year, are what were persuasive to Senator Coburn, and hopefully will be persuasive to others.
And did Senator Coburn explain why he was supporting Cordray and bucking the rest of his colleagues?
Not in great detail. I think, you know, Coburn has been known to go on his own path, and so it's probably a combination of that coupled with complete opposition to Cordray feels out of balance with what some of the regulated entities actually want, which is certainty.
So let's turn to the other hearing, of course, on the other nominee for the Security Exchange Commission, Mary Jo White. Oh, nobody's had a bad word to say about Cordray, except the Republicans, who haven't so much attacked him personally, but have claimed that they're really interested in trying to have this agency run better. At the same time, they want to control its budget and weaken its ability to conduct oversight. But there has been quite a bit of disquiet about Mary Jo White in the blogosphere and in lots of articles I've read, in the sense that nobody ever questions the fact that when she was a U.S. attorney, she went after drug dealers and mafia dons very successfully, but that she did work on Wall Street and that there's a kind of revolving door quality to this nomination. So how much of that came up, and how much did she satisfy those questions?
I think it came up pretty regularly. Almost every senator raised this possible conflict of interest that you're mentioning in some way or another. I think she certainly had the talking point down as to, you know, she's been cleared by the ethics process and told that her conflicts are not so much greater than former nominees to be SEC chair. You know, it's an open question. I mean, what was helpful and clarified in some ways is that she won't in any way need to recuse herself from any rulemakings, which is a good thing. But there is still the question as to what it will mean for enforcement. And since that's her known quantity, that she was such a tough AG, it's interesting to think that she might have to sit out some of those battles, and it's not a good thing.
Well, she's going to recuse herself or abstain from decisions that the SEC brought against the law firm of her husband, John White, who's the corporate attorney with Kravath, Swain, and Moore. But isn't the concern, as it is, for example, with the Pentagon revolving door and contractors and generals, et cetera, that if you've worked for a big Wall Street law firms and then you move into government oversight, that people from your professional past on Wall Street, isn't that what it's all about? It's all about knowing people and therefore getting face time?
Yes. So that's sort of a different question than specific bit of conflicts of interest,
sure.
And we completely agree at Public Citizen that the revolving door generally is a huge problem and leads to, you know, what you're talking about, agency capture, where, you know, it's much easier for folks from industry to seek out and have conversations and have their opinions known to folks who work inside these agencies. It's very worrisome generally. What is hard to say, sadly, is whether her specific instance is so much worse than any other. But across the board, it's a huge problem.
Well, as you know, Lisa Gilbert, there's been a lot of questions raised recently. In fact, there was a very effective frontline documentary called The Untouchables about Wall Street's bankers who brought the economy to a near-death experience and almost destroyed the global economy. They were made whole by the taxpayer. Now they're bigger, stronger than ever. They're too big to fail and apparently too big to jail, according to the Attorney General in some recent testimony. And the documentary featured Lanny Breuer, the main prosecutor of Wall Street in the Justice Department, who has manifestly failed and had all kinds of excuses. So there's a lot of people out there, myself included, that are just absolutely amazed at what happened here. It feels like the fix is in, you know? And I would like to know from you whether this woman who's just been appointed to the SEC, a key position, is she tainted? Is the fix in on her? Or do you think she's going to be what's required? Somebody's got to do something somewhere, and I'm wondering who it's going to be, apart from Elizabeth
well,
Warren.
Great question, and certainly something we're thinking about a lot. Too big to jail is a bad phenomenon for a number of reasons, both you know, this lack of prosecution, this deferred prosecution, which generally is a bad thing because corporate criminals should be held accountable just like any other criminal, but also the problem that it's tied into these institutions that are considered systemically too big to fail and that could be a reason to not prosecute. So those are serious problems. The question of whether the SEC is the place to take them on is an interesting one because it's not the criminal venue. So, you know, certainly she was asked that question a number of times today, and I think you're right. I mean, people are outraged, and they should be. This what happened with HSBC was appalling. And what she said is that she would be strong and that she would, you know, do the civil penalties that the SEC can do if wrongdoing is found. But what is not answered, and I think is separate from Mary Jo White's confirmation hearing, but is what DOJ will do to change its practices, because that's where the heart of what just happened lies. And so certainly we think that it's not acceptable for prosecution to be deferred based on size.
Well, as well as DOJ, isn't the controller of the currency the person who, or the agency that should have made criminal referrals over what happened on Wall Street, and they didn't make one? I'm just curious about why criminal referrals weren't made, given the enormous amount of fraud. And by the way, the enormous amount of evidence. I mean, you talk about a paper trail. This was all about paper trails. These were phony mortgages with phony paper, boxes and reams of it. So that's the part of this whole story that I find extraordinary, is why no criminal referrals? Is it the control of the currency that dropped the ball, or the DOJ?
Yeah, and that's actually what these oversight hearings have been trying to get the bottom of. So who made the recommendation to DOJ to not proceed? Why did the OCC not hold additional hearings? Why did the FDIC continue to insure HSBC? I mean, there's guilt to go around and mysteries to dig into, because no one knows the answer, which is unfortunate. Public Citizen is actually, we're in the mix of asking the OCC to initiate a hearing to take a look at this again.
OCC being the Office of the Control of the Currency.
Exactly.
So sorry, I didn't mean to interrupt you. You're asking the OCC to what?
Indeed. They have the authority to initiate a hearing to consider actual charter termination of institutions. At the very least, start looking into the fraud that you're talking about. And so we're hopeful that they'll comply with our request.
Again, I'm speaking with Lisa Gilbert, the director of Public Citizens Congress Watch Division. She's a contributor to the National Journal's expert blog on lobbying and ethics and writes frequently for the Huffington Post and Think Progress. So what's the sense then that you have, Lisa, of going back to Richard Cordray and this embattled agency that, I mean, it's pretty obvious to me in retrospect that it's a good thing that Elizabeth Warren didn't become the first head of that agency, given that she was the one who basically call for it to come into existence in the first place. I mean, she's so much more effective as a U.S. senator, isn't she? Particularly given what happened today, where instead of putting the witness on trial, who's already been questioned and up the kazoo at any rate, she turned the tables and questioned her Republican colleagues and smoked them out on their phony posturing.
Yeah, I mean, I think she is a champion on these issues and probably would have been equally successful if she had headed the CFPB, but we're very happy to have her in the Senate. And as I said at the top, she's certainly been living up to all the expectations of what she would be like as a senator thus far.
But what do you think is going to happen? I mean, is the Republican strategy, obviously at the behest of the banking lobby, to do all they can to weaken Dodd-Frank and to prevent this agency from hitting the ground running and doing its job? I mean, that seems to be their strategy. Can they continue to do what they're doing? Is there this hearing today? I don't know what it's going to lead to. So, to your mind, what is it going to require to stop this harassment and this phony posturing? I mean, short of public shaming, and apparently the public is not sufficiently upset with the Republican senators are aware of what's going on to weigh in. So even though they appear to be shamelessly working on behalf of these huge banks, I don't know what's going to stop them. Who's going to step up to the plate here?
It's a very good question. I think what's going to happen eventually is that the good record of the CFPB will continue to speak for itself. I mean, you mentioned that Coburn has switched sides on this, and I don't think he'll be the last to do so. You know, it's unlike other battles in which the banking industry has been out in front. You know, in this particular instance, there's pretty widespread consensus that Richard Cordray has done a balanced job in this role. And so it becomes harder and harder to stand on principle. So we'll see. I mean, certainly we don't have the votes right now to confirm him, and time will tell, but we're hopeful.
And in terms of Mary Jo White, who, as I mentioned earlier, there's some skepticism about her, even though she's got a pretty stellar record as a prosecutor. Nobody has suggested that Cordray is anything but qualified and should be supported. But in her case, what's your sense of whether she's going to surprise people and be the bulldog that she was when she was in the U.S. Attorney's Office?
I mean, my hope is that she does harken back to the last time that she was in government. I mean, that is, you know, the last time we saw her serve. And as you say, to all accounts, she did a fabulous job there. So we hope to see a similar record on enforcement and on rulemaking. You know, in particular, one thing that we're working on that will be a test, we think, of where she'll come down on rules is whether she's willing to push for the important petition for rulemaking on corporate political contribution disclosure. It's a huge issue in the wake of Citizens United. There's been a petition gathering steam that the SEC agreed to take up right as Mary Shapiro, the previous chair, was leaving. So Mary Jo White steps in at a critical juncture for that rule, and we think it's a pretty important test.
And this is basically a petition that would put some transparency on corporate money flowing into politics.
Exactly. And even more important, at least from the SEC's perspective, it would give investors the ability to know whether they should keep their funds in any particular corporation or whether they should move them based on their political activities.
So that the investor in a corporation has to be told who the corporation is supporting politically. And at this point, they're not.
At this point, they are not. And we think that information really matters to investors.
Well, I thank you for joining us here today and for filling us in on these important hearings, Lisa Gilbert.
Of course. Thanks.
Again, I've been speaking with Lisa Gilbert, who's director of Public Citizens Congress Watch Division. She's a contributor to the National Journal's expert blog on lobbying and ethics and writes frequently for The Huffington Post and Think Progress. We're going to take a brief station break and we'll be back talking about the overturning of the ban on big sugary drinks and its implication for obesity and public health.